the interruption, but I'm Mike Wilbon. Tony, more than 30 people in Stephenville, Texas, say they saw a UFO. You believe them?
Tony Kornheiser, believe them. Who do you think was up there getting probed?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
So, you know, the webpage or whatever is just something that you guys do for fun. Do you have a real job?
Well, that is our job.
Oh.
We don't technically get money for the hours we put in, but it is our job.
Well, I've kind of made a similar point in a sense where it's like you hear these disclosure people and it's like, we don't know shit about UFOs, dude. If you listen to those folks, you think that, like, you know, you think it was cut and dry. It's like they've moved on from trying to prove this or solve the mystery to just being like, okay, we give up. Give us the answer.
Yeah. You know,
that's pretty much it. It's like, we give up, give us the answer. It's like, that's no fucking way to live life, man. Like, you know, we'll figure it out.
Demanding it. Demanding the
answer. It's like a petulant child.
Yeah. In that book that I did, The Grades Have Been Framed, mm-hmm. I went nearly 300 pages, and there were so many things I didn't even touch on, and disclosure was one of them, that you could just go pages and pages and pages about the impracticality of that movement. That, like if a government official comes out and says, okay, there's an extraterrestrial presence, well, then critical thinking dictates that we ask for evidence of that. And then the can of worms there, even if it happened, is just incredible, just so huge. Of if they tell us that case A, B, and C, they don't know what it was, and it remains a mystery, and it wasn't them, and they don't think it was any adversaries in aircraft, and we really don't know what these are. Well, see, by default, then that means they do know what case D, E, and F were. And they're just not going to go down that trail because they're intelligence agencies that obscure what they've been doing. They don't clarify it to global adversaries and the public. And I don't know if the disclosure leaders are oblivious to that or whether they're aware of it and are somewhat taking advantage of a public that's oblivious to it. But it's just really difficult to get on board with virtually any aspect of it other than just wanting the truth. I can empathize with that. I just don't see how some of these organizations and people supposedly spearheading and lobbying can be part of that solution. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I have a difficult time with, and it's like, in a way, it's kind of like we were talking about with the public perception, in a sense, where it's like people expect, like, that, you know, Trump, oh, God help us, Trump, would, you know, will come out and just say, hey, the UFOs are real. It's like, it's not, you know, it's not going to be like that cut and dry, folks. It's not, you know, and they think, like, and, like, people listening right now might be like, yeah, no ship and all. But it's like that's the scenario that's being sold, fuckers. That's the scenario that's being sold. That Trump's gonna walk out to a fucking podium like when they killed Osama bin Laden and go, UFOs are real. It's like that's what people are expecting now. That's what they're championing. It's like completely illogical.
Yeah, it is. It's irrational. It's just not how intelligence agencies operate to do things like that. And as I said, it just shows either a lack of understanding of that or targeting people that don't understand it or some combination thereof.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen this thing likened to, like, civil rights and gay rights and stuff like that. It's like, dude, no one's fucking being persecuted because the UFO secret is a secret. You know what I mean? So don't liken it to those movements, because they're completely different things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, these were people fighting for their rights. And, you know, no one's really being persecuted, because I guess if you're gonna be a real conspiracy theorist, you'd pull the camera all the way back and be like, yeah, well, we are, because we have to work and we could be living in a utopia and shit. And it's like, yeah, dude, and if my rabbit had wings, he wouldn't hit his ass when he fucking hops. You know
right.
what I mean? It's like
right.
there's a lot of things we could be doing. There's a lot of great things that could be happening, but it's like, it doesn't hinge on the UFO thing, man. I don't think. I hope not.
No, and especially when those disclosure advocates have already decided that it's extraterrestrial. Like, they're not even asking for documents and information on UFOs. They're cut lettuce in on the alien presence, and that's a tough sell, man. That's a really tough sell.
Yeah, because to me it's like, again, it's like you're like a petulant child. You're like, at least I could get on board with kind of what you're, the alternative kind of that you just suggested, where it's like, hey, man, I'm down for more clues. If you guys want to give us some more clues, that would be great, but, you know, I don't think they're going to just come out and tell us. I put forward the idea that, like, if they really wanted to get around this, they would just say, like, the next time they send a rover to Mars, they'd be like, hey, we found an ancient civilization there, but don't worry, they're dead, so they can't hurt us. But apparently intelligent life's out there. But these intelligent lives died, so we should get our act together here so we don't end up like them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then that would kind of get over the hump of, like, is it out there and shit without without the – because it's a really complicated issue, you know, but beyond even – all the people, you know, there's people like, oh, it would affect the religions and economies and all that. Absolutely. But it's like, just the sense of an other that could be, if they were like, yeah, they're coming here, that people would be freak out. You know what I'm saying? So if you were like, yeah, they existed, but they're almost certainly dead and gone. Something happened, you know, maybe they left. We don't know. But they're of no threat to us. I guess that's the point.
Uh-huh.
That's the only scenario I could even see them entertaining as a possibility, if it's even fucking true, you know. You know what I mean?
Well, I think too that this is I think it's important to have some understandings of how the UFO topic has been exploited by the intelligence community, and for good, bad, or indifferent, it just has. And there are any number of cases that can be demonstrated that it has, and this doesn't necessarily, in fact, it probably doesn't have anything to do with an actual UFO in many cases,
right,
as much as the exploitation of the topic. And the reason I think it's important that we have some understanding of that is it would make it more clear how this supposed disclosure just ain't going to happen. That they're literally talking about soliciting the agencies that have lied from the 1940s all down the line about what they were doing, and asking them to now just say, oh, yeah, well, you know, here's what was really going on.
Right, right.
And people that don't understand that history of misinformation and propaganda and lies might not even be a fair way to put it, because, again, that's kind of acting like the public was victimized, and that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is they were just
misled.
Yeah, and as a byproduct, like not even the intended audience, but the certain powers that be just made decisions that it was worth the objective at the time in the specific operation for the public to be misinformed because the payoff was worth it. And when people don't understand these cases that happen, they don't understand the complexity of now just demanding that the president come to the podium and come clean about UFOs. And it just ain't the way it works, man. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it ain't gonna happen.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly. Well, I thought it was interesting in the book that one thing, I had never seen it before. It was in the chapter where you were talking about James Carrion, that he had a book, and in his book, which you mentioned in quote, there was this is absolutely mind-blowing, and it stuck out to me. There was an FBI memo from July 30th, 1947, which is like between Kenneth Arnold and Roswell.
Right.
When it all began, folks. An FBI memo that says the Air Force is releasing discs connected via a wire out of planes. It's like, how the fuck have I never heard that story before? And, like, are you kidding me? Like,
you know what's even more interesting about that? Like, absolutely, man. This is like the Chinese puzzle here, the deeper you get into it. And I've got more FOIAs out on that stuff now that they're probably going to tell me to go to hell, but I'm at least going to ask.
Right.
Is the guys that were exchanging these memos are now at least one of them is conclusively demonstrated by Carrion to be an expert in deception planning and implementation. And he was exchanging memos with the FBI about their UFO investigations. Now, how far that goes or how important it is, you know, is maybe yet to be seen. But, yeah, that's some stuff I'd like to know more about as compared to just screaming at the White House to come clean about UFOs. It's a fascinating era of history, and I'll throw in my disclaimer now that certainly doesn't account for all reports, all high
right.
strangeness, certainly not. I mean, they go back as far as humankind, and they'll go on long after I'm dead and gone, I would imagine, in some way, shape, or form. But, yeah, it's pretty evident that at the least the Air Force and the CIA and other intelligence agencies, during what was a very tumultuous point in history and the birth of the CIA, the late 1940s, were very much exploring, and that's documented, we're exploring the use of the UFO subject as a psychological warfare tool, and we have every reason to think that they pursued it. There's a Spitsbergen Norway case where we have every reason to think that based on a declassified file at the NSA that it was a so-called crash UFO, crash flying saucer, was a fabricated story, probably by the U.S. intelligence community. And in fact, my last post at my blog was about that story. And there's just a fascinating chain of dots there that could be connected that we have to, or some of us feel a desire to want to learn more about how they're connected and exactly what it indicates. And it's indeed challenging to try to separate that from it doesn't indicate answers to every report and every case and everything strange that took place. Yet it not only changes our thinking about the past, that when we don't know how involved the intelligence community got in the circumstances, at which a lot of, like you're saying by quoting that passage, can be learned, and many people that consider themselves knowledgeable about UFOs still don't understand a great deal of that. then if we think, and there's even more deeper in the Chinese puzzle than what can be surmised at this point, it really changes what we thought we knew. And as I mentioned earlier, it even conditions people to incorrectly think they understand something that hasn't even happened yet. Like, just based on what you already kind of take for granted you thought you knew that might be incorrect will affect what you think you saw next week sometime that hasn't even happened yet. And it's a very challenging topic to try to untie that bird's nest and get straightened out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because it's like, for folks who are like, why would they make all this shit up? It's like, they could just, you know, they probably wanted the Russians to think we were working with aliens and stuff, or we had alien technology and stuff. It's funny, it's like people, the big sort of conspiracy theory, you know, is like that they got the alien technology and, like, weaponized it. But it's like, maybe they just weaponized the UFO alien myth. Like, maybe
right.
that's what happened.
And
or
it would change.
Mystery. No.
Yeah, like why they did Spitz version might be different than why they did Aztec or something like that. And then even the same myth might have different uses at different times, you know, to come back to later. And yeah, it's pretty fascinating. And yeah, the guys itself can be the guys sometimes. Like Martin Ornay was an expert in hypnosis and a CIA consultant during MKUltra, and some of the reports that he published, as well as some now declassified reports about his work, suggest that one of his techniques was to just lead people to believe he had advanced techniques. Yeah. So,
yeah, exactly.
You're defenseless, trust me, you know.
And people believe it, yeah, they fall, yeah.
Yeah, he had a whole elaborate, he recommended anyway, a whole elaborate system of pseudo-sham hypnosis techniques how to lead people that were being interrogated to think that they were defenseless to the interrogation techniques. And, yeah, I mean,
and it's go ahead.
I liked what James Carrion said in that interview in my book, too, something to the effect of, people that aren't familiar with intelligence agencies are just clueless of the extents they'll go once they've targeted a situation or an individual. And yeah, there's some pretty clever guys that have been in that agency over the years, you know.
Yeah, I have a feeling the president's finding that out right about now.
If he's smart enough to notice what he's finding, can identify intelligence.
You don't pick a fight with the intelligence agencies, dude. Come on. What are you, fucking crazy?
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, the next thing you know, every newspaper in the country's got like 12 sources in the CIA. It's like, okay, you gotta fuck yourself, man. It's a challenge. I mean, I still love ufology and UFO research and the field and stuff. But to me, like I said, like we were talking about before, it's like, I feel like we're in the back row at the circus here, kind of watching it unfold. And as I said before, this whole thing, like, oh, ufology's dead. It's like, enough with that shit, folks. It's like, you know, at what point did ufology die? I've seen and heard it like a million times at this point. It's like, I think because of the big anniversaries this past few weeks with the Kenneth Arnold and the Roswell one this summer, it's like a lot of people are getting back on that ufology's dead horse. It's like, no shit, man. You know, it's splintered off. I think it's just it's really splintered off. I think because we have reached a point where, like, they've been trying a certain way for so long that that it didn't work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, collecting, like, it would be interesting to look at I guess, like different mysteries and see sort of like the ebb and flow of interest and sort of and that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Because it's like nobody's really, with the exception of Gian Cassar, who's a good friend of the show, like nobody's doing Bermuda Triangle. You know what I mean? Like there's only like one person going after Amelia Earhart. It's like there's really
yeah.
No. So it makes you wonder, like, did we reach some generational point here now where it's like the original people who sort of did all the original, who built ufology, they're like gone or going, and we've reached a new generation of people, and it's a different, you know, I think maybe people are kind of like just frustrated because they realize that all this, there's been no progress. What seems like progress really is no progress.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that got me interested in the intelligence community and the social aspects is I don't deny necessarily anyway that there might be something of interest in, like I mentioned, the Snoopy 2 case or Carrie Mullis's reported encounter at his cabin in California. But I'm not qualified to do anything about it, and I don't know where someone would go with it anyway. So, yeah, I just started kind of working on things that I felt like I had some means to work on and that might could be productive. But I don't think in that way, no, I don't think it's dead. I think that people talk about it and write about it for something to do. I think they're angry about certain things. But, you know, one of the things we could talk about here, like you started at the top of the show about the way those of us that have been at it a while might not remember what it's like. Speaking of younger generations, I mean, Tom DeLonge's got a lot of fans, man.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's a lot of people that are going to be interested in and are interested in what he's been talking and writing about. And, I mean, that's got ties in it of UFO stuff, Mirage Men, and everything else. All, you know, whole new chapter opening.
Oh, yeah, that seems like it's going to be, yeah, that seems like there's something, there's a man behind the curtain with all that. There's something going on there that we're not quite sure about, you know. It's been a weird year like that. It's been a strange kind of year. Say to Greg Bishop recently, or back in April, I think, that at one point there were like three different factions aside from the traditional disclosure group that Steve Bassett runs, but there were like three other factions, like a Tom DeLonge faction, a group of Canadians, and I forget who Grant Cameron, who were all like talking about disclosure in some format.
Yeah.
So it's like, what the, you know, but like I said, I think there's a certain like level of frustration, like you said, that where it's just people have reached a point where it's like all the avenues we've tried aren't working. You know what I mean? So when they say, oh, ufology's dead, what they mean is, like, our system of trying to figure this out doesn't work. That's what they're really trying to say. So it's like, just say that, man. Like, don't, you know.
Yeah, and I did kind of come to a point where I don't think there is anywhere to go with trying to get something under a glass that you can't put in a lab.
Right.
And I'm willing to trust the qualified experts on that, the people that do have the letters behind their name and that work at universities, that you just have to shrug your shoulders until your systems of investigation and your understandings of the physics and the environment allow you to study something more closely, even if it ends up being the human brain or whatever it works out to be. And like I say, that's why I started down the, as one person put it, I started looking at the people doing the pointing instead of what they were pointing at.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's, I've always been more interested in the people than the phenomenon, because it's like the phenomenon, once you've heard, like, once you've heard, you know, your share of UFO stories, you know, I'm sure you and I each have probably heard, like, it's probably in the thousands at this point, UFO stories. So it's like, what, you know, you become jaded to it, where you're like, I don't know, it probably doesn't happen to you, but, you know, well, maybe it does, but, you know, you run into someone that you don't, that you, like a high school reunion or some shit, you know, or you're running into somebody at a barbecue, and they're like, they want to tell you their UFO story, and it's like, you feel bad for them, because it's like the greatest, most fantastic thing that's, like, ever happened to them, but to me, it's like, yeah, I've heard a million of those, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez. You know, it's like, I've never, have you ever seen anything? Have you ever seen an unidentified anomalous, you know?
I have, and I eventually became okay with accepting that I don't know what happened. And
yeah,
that's just pretty much where I decided to leave it. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina, when I was a kid. I have a memory of seeing something unusual. And the reason I even say I have a memory of is trying to be accurate about it, because, you know, delving into this subject led me to also reading the work of memory experts and about how memory works. And I would have to accept at this point that, based on what the people that should know, the qualified experts, tell us, I probably don't know. I probably don't have accurate memories of what happened at that point anymore, as compared to I remember what I've thought about now for 40 years, you know, instead of remembering what actually took place. Or I at least have to consider that, like, it doesn't have, like, the emotional pull of a memory anymore.
Yeah,
as much as a thought and a speculation, and, like, just shrug. I don't know what happened, but I saw something in the sky that I didn't know what it was. So, yeah, I guess I've seen a UFO. And, yeah, that had a lot to do with continuing my interest in it. I was also interested at the time. I'd always been, as long as I can remember, you know, I was into ghost stories and strange stuff. But, yeah, so, yeah, would be the answer. But I just eventually, and I think I would kind of encourage people to be okay with coming to terms. At least it worked for me with, I don't know what happened, and I'll read or study stuff that can be studied instead of running in circles, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, we're coming up near the end. Can you keep going a little while? Are you cool? Or do you
sure.
Got... All right.
Whatever
nice.
You want to do.
Nice, because
sure.
I'm enjoying the conversation, so we can just keep going. We're going to lose live listeners, like, in, I don't know, like 10 minutes or so. So thank you to all the folks listening live. And the blog is ufotrail.blogspot.com?
That's correct.
Nice. And the book is The Grays Were Framed. Folks, get it. This is one of those books that ufology has been crying out for, you know, because it should. And I think, I mean, maybe you can correct me on this. I'm not positive about this because I'm not up on the latest works. But I think that your book is like the only one out there that tells the Emma Woods story. And certainly in the most complete form. Because Jeremy,
you may be correct about that. You may be correct. I think there might be some upcoming stuff that might delve into it again. But I think that's accurate now that you mention it. I devoted a couple of chapters to specific hypnosis stuff, as well as the Emma Woods story and the hybrid stuff, for lack of a better term, unsubstantiated claims. And I shared with the reader my attempts to interview David Jacobs, who agreed to be interviewed, and I shared, and that's on my blog as well, and my interactions with Barbara Lamb. And
yeah, it sounds like when you approach these folks, they generally run away once they figure out that you're onto the game, Right. I think I remember you posted a tweet before Roswell where you're like, I emailed Barbara Lamb like fucking 3 years ago with a simple question about DNA testing, and she said she was working on it or something like that, right?
Yeah, she was busy. Yeah. And I always think of Dr. Coke, John. I guess she's too busy to accept her Nobel, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah.
I'd love to get that Nobel, but I've got a tight schedule this week. Yeah.
At MUFON, you know, Fort Lauderdale or something. It's like,
Yeah,
so folks, get that book, and it's outstanding. I can't put it over enough. It's really good, and it's a breath of fresh air in the realm of UFO books. So, you know, it's a lot of books, you know, they kind of just, they either rehash all the old cases or just speculate endlessly on the mystery of it. Yours actually has, like, tangible information that people can use and, you know, possibly sort of like... have a course correction, in a sense, when it comes to this mystery and following the mystery, you know what I mean? Where you can kind of throw out some of that shit that maybe you had that was informing your view on this, specifically like in the abduction stuff.
Yeah, well, thank you. I did track some of the stories because, you know, I read Hopkins and Jacobs and I went to the lectures and I heard John Mack and I read Whitley Strieber, et cetera, in the 90s. And I would walk away with questions about, like, wow, how can they not address this and this and this? Like, they don't even bring it up. And so I tracked some of those questions and stories at least as far as I could go with them up to the point that people just, like, okay, you know, that's it. We're not talking anymore. And that, like you say, that's pretty suggestive in itself, where you're at when somebody just says, I'm busy, you know. And, yeah, one of those that, I mean, really deserves more attention than it gets is the Carpenter Affair, that is about former abduction researcher for MUFON, director of abduction research in the 1990s, turned over some 140 case files without the consent of the possible abductees that were explored in the files. And there, some of them had, you know, hypnosis tapes and whatnot, and was given to Robert Bigelow and his NIDS team. And a lot of people still don't know about that. I talked to a former MUFON state director recently that said they'll have to look at my blog posts and check out the book because they didn't know anything about it. And
go ahead.
Yeah, that's just one of those things that a lot of people just aren't aware of what's even taken place within the genre that, yeah, casts a great deal of doubt over the quality of the information. Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that about the movie. I bet you, like, there's a good portion, a good percentage of the people in MUFON who are sort of like on the state level and shit have no idea, like, anything about how the organization works or anything like that. You know what I mean? So they wouldn't even, they're not privy to the, it's like inside baseball to them or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a recurring thing I hear from MUFON people is that they almost felt naive later because they read all the stuff about science and the pitch, and it sounded good, and they thought, wow, this will be great. And then they felt deceived when they actually got involved.
Yeah, it's like, it sounds like it's like Scientology almost, you know, where it's like, you know, you get in, you know, you're promised sort of this, and it even has the sciency aspect of it, where it's like, this is based in a science, but it's like, no, it's, you know, then you get in there and you get deep enough and you're like, shit, it's all about fucking crazy aliens, you know. And it's a little lot of, they're very similar, actually. So, but yeah, I mean, MUFON's a mess, man. This feels like the year that it's really, it's, It's funny, though, because I guess that thing in Vegas was a... Now, we're off the live show. We're still taping. We're still rolling here, so just wanted to give you a heads up. So the thing in Vegas, I guess, was like a huge success. So it's like they're... For all the bad shit, their secret space conference was a big success. So I don't expect them... I think they're going to go, okay, well, you know, we've lost the respect of, like, 35, 36 UFO researchers, but at the same time, you know, we drew 2,500 people to this event. When we held it in Pittsburgh, we drew, you know, 500. So, clearly, who gives a fuck?
Yeah, I think, too, it's clear by some of the directions that the organization took that some of its leadership are quite interested in television connections and entertainment, whether they call it that or even admit it to themselves or not,
right.
It's clear that that's what they're interested in. And I don't know. Did you see any articles? Did you read? I have not, is why I asked. What kind of turnout they claim they got at the conference? Like how many hundreds of people?
I saw like 2,000 people. I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think that's what I saw, but I haven't really looked too deeply into it. But I know that it was considered a big success. So, you know,
if I did a UFO conference and drew 2,000 people, that would be, I would consider that wildly successful.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And you'd have to do it, you know, you'd have to do like a secret space conference, you know. It's funny, we've talked about it in a sense. Well, you know something, that's not entirely true, because I think that part of the problem is like the people who are sort of like you and me and serious about this shit and not sensationalizing it and stuff, like we could do a better job of selling it, I think. I think that's because we're just not natural you know, promoters in a sense.
Yeah, because we're not selling it. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. It's like if I put on a conference here with like you and Greg Bishop and serious people, Nick Redfern, serious people doing, you know, Tyler Cope, John, it's like I might be able to sell tickets, but I'd have to get out there and really pound the pavement, you know, and do what it takes to sell it in a sense. So I guess what I'm saying is like serious ufology, you can say there's no audience for it, but it's almost like no one's really trying to sell it either.
Yeah, I think there is an audience for credible information. I think there's even an audience for speculation if it's correctly identified as that and not tried to be packaged as conclusive. I think we're also living in a time that we're seeing the clumsy transition from live conferences to streaming conferences. And with the technology that's available today, I don't think, well, I know it's not necessary to bring speakers from all over the nation to a single city and to expect attendees to either travel or you have to bring them to a city that will have enough attendees that reside there. And I'm not sure that that's going to continue to be cost effective when you can do things on the internet.
Yeah.
And that, and like I say, that's just a clumsy transition that we're seeing. And hopefully that we'll get to that sooner than later of how quality events can be done online and if not be profitable, at least not put the event organizer in a hole. Without having to, I mean, that's, you know, a lot of expense, all of that travel and hotels and rental cars and, you know, a lot of stuff that is not necessary if you could have successful internet events, you know.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think I can't, because I've been in this so long and shit, I can't even like, if I go to a conference, I'm like fidgeted in my seat like 5 minutes after the person starts. I can't sit still, so I'm a hard sell on any of that stuff. But it's like, to me, I still think, to me, the fun is sort of like meeting these people at the vendor tables and shit. You know,
uh-huh.
I don't know how much you experience that, like, at Roswell, but it's like the downtime and the camaraderie is kind of, like, more fun.
Yeah, hanging out. Yeah, definitely. That's part of it. Connecting faces with names and meeting new people. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's always been, like, the most fun for me. And then you get in there and then you get the presentation, and it's like, oh, I don't have the attention span to watch, like, a 90-minute slide, you know, PowerPoint presentation, even if the person's, like, really good, you know what I mean? It's
uh-huh.
like, I don't know. So to sit in front of the computer and watch, like, a day's worth of that, I think would be, like, a hard sell. But, I mean...
It might be, and... Like I say, it is a clumsy time that we're trying to transition into what will work. When you're right, that, like, I mean, even before everybody walked around all day with a phone in their hand, if you were good, you could keep somebody's attention about 10 minutes,
yeah.
You know, before you have to realize you have to keep drawing their attention back.
Yeah, that's why you got to
now,
pop the next slide up, yeah.
I mean, you know the diagnostics. You look at your website, 3 seconds till they clicked on something else, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and I think, if anything, if there's a transition going on, maybe it's from the conference to the self-serving, you say, in a sense, but, like, to podcasts, just because you can take them on the go. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
Like, there used to be just the oversaturation of paranormal podcasts and media and shit. It's like, I think that has gone a long way to sort of taking a bite out of the conference thing. Because before it was like you'd read the books. When would you get a chance to see somebody like a Rich Dolan or a Stan Friedman? Like when they came to town. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now it's like
yeah.
they got their own, you know, Rich Dolan's got his own show. Stan Friedman is on like every show. So it's like you don't. And on a lot of these shows, not my show because I'm an asshole, but on a lot of these shows you can call in and talk to the guests. So it's like,
yeah.
You know, they get that opportunity too. So I think
they're more accessible than ever. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. When before, if it was like, I got a crazy thing that happened to me and I've got to tell Stan Friedman. It's like you'd have to go to like, you'd have to write him a letter or you'd have to like go to Idaho or wherever he was that weekend. You know, because
yeah.
like I mean,
yeah.
I've heard stories from folks like him and Lauren Coleman and other folks. Like, you know, people will come up to them and be like, "I gotta tell you this story." You know what I mean? It's like clearly they came just for that.
Yeah, I mentioned you know seeing Bud Hopkins at a conference, and yeah, they would swamp him, man.
Oh
just
yeah,
swamp him.
Yeah, it's hard to yeah. It's always funny, yeah. Greg was saying that it happened to him, and it's happened to me before, too, where it's like having him in Roswell, and having to meet with Stan, too, in Canada. But it's like you'll talk, because, you know, I kind of know Stan pretty well now at this point. It's been a long time. I've interviewed him, like, a million times. So, you know, we know each other and shit. So, you know, I'll be just sitting there talking to him about God knows what. And, like, people will just come over and just start talking to him while you're talking to him and just completely interrupt your conversation.
Uh-huh.
It's insane in a lot of ways, but it's also, I guess it's cool, you know, because I love Stan, so that's awesome for him, but it's like, Jesus, that must be kind of, like, maddening in a way, but.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So what did you think of Roswell? Now, you were a part of sort of the alternative to the ETH event, right?
That's correct. Guy Malone organized it, and I thought he did a very good job. He was very accommodating and helpful, and I was glad to be involved in it.
Was that your first time in Roswell?
It was. It was my first time speaking at a conference as well.
Oh, nice.
And
congratulations.
Thank you. I've attended many but it was my first time speaking. It was an interesting experience in that the folks that I met were obviously interested in government obfuscation, and they were obviously willing to hear about the things I write about, or I wouldn't have been meeting them. Where in other parts of town during the festival, there were much more ET-minded events going on, and it was kind of interesting and sort of ironic that Roswell would produce a probably significant percentage of its UFO community would be willing to hear the alternative ideas, because maybe even ahead of the UFO curve, they might be kind of tired of, you know, we've heard this ETH for years, and
right, you know.
So that was kind of interesting. The very first speaker was Guy Malone, and he presented his research about the likelihood that the crash didn't have anything to do with extraterrestrials and may have been the ET story may have helped, or the flying saucer story may have helped hide some other experiments that were taking place, maybe with flying craft or different types of more nefarious things. But at any rate, yeah, one gentleman right there in the audience began heckling. It seemed to disturb him so much that he yelled hogwash at the speaker.
Oh my God.
Why did he go to like an Jesus.
Yeah, and he just like was interrupting him, going, "So do you believe there were flying saucers in Roswell?" And you know, obviously not, you know, based on the research he's presenting. He'd require more information to reach such a belief, you know.
That almost strikes me as like somebody who went there with the sole intention of that. That like they're like, "What? Fuck this guy! I'm going to that event, and I'm gonna give him a piece of my." You know what I mean? It's like
that's entirely possible. It started with somewhat of a bang like that, and then mellowed out as the weekend went on. That I guess word got around more that, you know, what our conference was about as compared to some of the others.
What did you think of Roswell, the city? Is it? I've never been, so I'm hoping to make a trip out there at some point soon. But what is it like a UFO? I heard there's like UFOs like everywhere and shit.
Yeah, there are. In fact, being here in the Orlando area, it kind of reminded me of the way the Mouseers are here.
Really?
Yeah, like somebody will just come walking by like with a flying saucer on their T-shirt and like clearly isn't even thinking about it. You know, like just like they might be wearing a Red Sox hat.
Right, yeah.
You know, I don't even see it anymore, yeah. And, yeah, there it's in logos on lots of businesses. A credit union had a flying saucer logo. And. Very friendly people, hospitable. It was an enjoyable trip from that aspect. As you might imagine, some great Tex-Mex. Yeah.
I got a friend who's an attorney in Roswell here, actually. He actually, I don't know if he planned it this way. I don't think so. But like him and his wife like left town when the circus came to town, so they weren't even there. But he lives there, you know, year round. So he was telling me about sort of the. It's funny. Interesting to like meet somebody who actually lives there, because like you're saying, it's like that's just sort of the background noise in a way. You know what I mean? To them,
yeah.
It's their city. You know, to them it's their city, and it's like, yeah, we have this UFO thing going on. It's like people in Salem, Mass, with the witches and stuff.
Yeah. I did read somewhere while there that I think the population of the town like doubled during that week. Yeah, that there were so many people coming in, and it's like, not sure how I'd feel about that if I lived there. I guess it depends on if it takes your business from the red to the black that week every year, you know?
Yeah, that's what they were telling me, that it's like kind of Christmas for the town. That's when they make all their money and shit, so.
Uh-huh.
Which makes sense. I mean, it's kind of out of the way, right? Although I guess then they have direct flights from Dallas. Is good.
Yeah, another thing I read, it wasn't this year, it was in years past, but a mayor was asked if he believed in aliens, and he said something to the effect of, I believe in money. And I thought, good for him, because that is his job, to create commerce and help the businesses to thrive, and so I thought that's more than fair from the mayor to say that, you know, let people have fun, enjoy themselves, and, you know, promote tourism, absolutely.
Yeah, well, it's funny, it's you see some towns that like there's this weird like trend with Bigfoot that like now towns are sort of embracing. They're trying. I wouldn't say they're trying to be like the Roswell of Bigfoot, but like they're embracing like Bigfoot essentially in their branding and shit. Like one town in Alabama, I think, declared themselves the Bigfoot capital of Alabama.
Wow,
which
is like the premise. excuse me, like the premise of the old Scooby-Doo cartoon, you know. That, like, we'll create this sham to bring visitors.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, Scooby-Doo is always like to steal the property out from under the guy. But
he's either like, scaring them off to close down the amusement park to, like, make it cheap to buy.
Yeah.
Or trying to, like, make the hotel a popular destination, yeah.
Yeah, you definitely see that with like a ghost hotel type places. That really became a big thing too. But
really enjoyed in Eureka Springs, by the way. But that was fun. But you were about to say.
I was just gonna say you can kind of see. Well, Kecksburg and Exeter have gotten on board with the raw. You know, they're trying to like take advantage of their UFO history too, because they see what happened with Roswell. So it's like it's an interesting dynamic in a way.
Yeah, it is. I would think that the original ranch in Roswell could even capitalize on that if they wanted, because you do kind of want to just see the spot,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
Like just look at it.
Did you get a chance to see the spot? I heard it's kind of like fucking out of the way, like a pain in the ass to go see.
I did not go. I understand there may have been a TV show that filmed out there and whatnot. And, you know, for the reasons we've been discussing the last couple hours, I wasn't interested in being a part of that. I have not, because like you say, I don't want to just, you know, bother people and stuff. But yeah, if it were a matter of, you know, pay your $10 or whatever and take a tour, I would, sure.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's, like I said, I think it's like kind of out of the way. I mean, but I don't know if I go visit my family friend who lives in Roswell, I'll probably try and do that at some point. But Yeah, I never really got a chance. I've never been out there. I really want to check it out at some point. But I don't know if I'd like it more or less if I went when there was no, when it wasn't the big festival. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I've always thought about doing it. If I ever wrote for like a national publication or something like that, I would, like a magazine. I always thought about doing an article just like about the, like what happens at Roswell after like the festival, you know what I mean? When the circus leaves town, you know?
Yeah, that would be interesting. It would.
And I have the best title for it, The Day After Roswell.
There you go.
It would be The Day After Roswell. It would be like, what's it like in Roswell when everyone leaves town, you know? And it's like they put away their, it's like how you go to CVS, like, the day after Halloween, and all of a sudden they have all the Thanksgiving stuff, like, overnight is up, you know? It's probably like all these people start bringing in their alien shit.
You know, they really could. I don't know, maybe we're just a small minority that they couldn't make money off, but it seems like they could make it get much more organized with tours and stuff, because, like, one thing I did see while I was there, at least from the outside, I didn't go in, but was the funeral home where bodies were allegedly taken, or they got the, you know, coffins, whatever the story was.
It was involved in that.
I do think that's interesting that, like, it's still standing in the same place. Like, that kind of thing would be interesting to know. And
I wouldn't call it, maybe not like a walking tour, but like a bus tour where you stop at key locations. Like, here's Mac Brazel's house, or here's the radio station where they, or here's the newspaper where they put out the newspaper, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and this building is where, they received the press release, absolutely.
Yeah, like, I'm sure, you know, that picture, that famous picture where he's holding the note and people have tried to decipher the note, it's like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's not there anymore, but maybe that building is the same. You know, you can go in and recreate the photo. You know, that would be the kind of cool thing you could do.
Yeah, it would. It would. And you're in the photo. Yeah.
It would be like how you go to Dealey Plaza and they have the you know, the crow's nest where Oswald supposedly shot JFK from, like, all sealed off and shit, and as it was that day. It's like, that would be kind of neat for Roswell, but...
Yeah, it would. It would.
I haven't checked it out, but I'd like to. So, I probably will.
Because, all over town, there's little spaceships, saucer-like things, and aliens, and you can just, like, pull your car over and get out and take a picture leaning against a flying saucer, and all over the place.
It sounds pretty cool. I'd like to check it out. I'm sure I will eventually. But it sounds like you had a good time, so that's cool.
I did. I enjoyed it, and like I said, Guy Malone, I felt did a very good job. I was impressed with his objectivity and the way he made sure that all of the people he invited had what they needed, and it was well done on his behalf.
All right, let me see if I – are you doing any other speaking engagements that we should know about, any upcoming appearances?
I do not right now. I am deciding what direction I'm wanting to go in, maybe with the possible new project. I'm going to have a blog post up here in a couple of days that I, it will be a relatively long read on some of the things about the intelligence community we've touched on here and how the topic has been exploited over the years, and particularly the supposed crash stories, and we can see that meme coming up in different times again and again throughout the history that researchers, you know, intelligence agents or people that seem to know a lot about stories will approach researchers and give them this, you know, put a bee in their bonnet about some crashed saucer somewhere, that it really looks like they're just trying to throw a wrench in the gears by giving them these stories sometimes, man, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And I'll give some specific examples of how that's played out, and at least quoting some other researchers, and hopefully people will find that interesting to read about. I have.
Oh, man, I'm sure they will, dude. It's, you know, the crash thing. That kind of, I remember, like, I think Robert Wood and his dad wrote a book or something on UFO crashes, that there was like 36 of them in the book or something like that. So it's,
yeah, I mean, just dozens that like, wow, you know, what's up with all of this? I can tell you too that it's not all old history, even if the intelligence community doesn't have anything to do with some of the newer ones. The meme is obviously still alive and well, if they ever want to come back to it, that the community itself keeps perpetuating it.
Yeah, like they set it off into motion. Now they can tap into it when they want, but they're not necessarily anymore.
Like, yeah. In 2004, in a suburb outside of Orlando called Castleberry, there was a story got circulating that there had been a UFO crash, and it really caught on. And being here in Central Florida, I decided to write about it in like 2013. I did FOIA requests and interviewed some local people and, you know, dug up what I could on it. And being here in Central Florida, I was going to say, I had heard so much about this from so many people that I feel were sincere and believed something happened, and that they thought they knew people that were sincere, and so on and so forth, that when I first started on it, I had expectations that I would find a satellite reentry or maybe a light plane crash or something to that effect, that I thought, I'm going to find this and then everybody's going to tell me that was just the explanation for the cover-up. And even that I couldn't find. That, I mean, there was like no crash of nothing. And it all started out of what seems to have probably been a really unusually loud clap of lightning and thunder. One guy was fortunate enough, because it did happen to be the 4th of July, but it wasn't fireworks. One guy did happen to have it on video, and it is a really unusually long thunder. And so a lot of people thought a meteor, but weather says no. Weather system, weather stations and radar and all just say no, there wasn't anything. And even as critical as I can be of the UFO community, it shows how, you know, I hesitate to say even I, because, you know, I mean, all of us are subject to our biases. But I thought, because I had been so conditioned that something happened and something went down, I even thought I was going to find something. And no, it's all just a story, man. If it's not, then I wasn't able to find anything more on it. And that happened in 2004, and there's been more myths since that have gone around the UFO community, and I'll be writing about some of that. But, yeah, it's very much alive and well. Man, this thing in the Orlando suburb, it had stories about the FBI was here keeping people out of the crash site, and people were talking about NASA vehicles were racing around, and people were claiming that people in the neighborhood got sick. And I couldn't find a single person that even claimed to have seen anything in the air. Nobody that claimed to have seen the crash site, no pictures of these alleged FBI people. And I did find UFO reports that would claim they saw it, but they'd leave out what should have been an easy to add address. And one guy even submitted a picture of a meteor that I conclusively found out the picture was taken in Texas, that he submitted for this report of the crashed UFO alleged. Yeah, and it's like, wow, even if the government's not involved in that misinformation, people just go nuts to just float a story,
yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, the dynamic is certainly ready and waiting if the powers that be decide to use it again.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy about the picture. That makes me laugh. I don't know what.
It is crazy that, like, one thing I can say, and I'm sure by now you've been in this long enough that you've met people too, that they do feel the ends justify the means, and
are
people that will think it's okay to hoax a story because, well, it's really kind of true anyway, they feel.
God. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get into politics again, but it's like we're living in an the ends justify the means fucking world now, man.
Yeah, we are.
It's scary. Like, you know, that seems to be the attitude of a lot of people.
And because I've seen that dynamic so heavily in the UFO community, I'm a little less trigger happy with the conspiracies because I have seen people that will just full on ends justify the means. But yeah, it's rather extraordinary how propped up this 2004 UFO crash was that you can't get a single primary witness to discuss.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. But I was going to ask you, what do you think of the Bob Bigelow thing that happened earlier this year? Because you're kind of a straight shooter like me. So, you know, it was very, I found it very like, I just felt like he was really ambiguous to the point where it was like, there's something to be gleaned from the ambiguity or something, if that makes any sense, you know? It's like he's either trying to hint that he knows more than he knows, or he knows more than he's willing to. It was like, this guy's fucking being intentionally ambiguous for a reason. Now I'm confused and trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I didn't watch the interview because my research has led me to be really doubtful of his claims, and I didn't watch it because I thought it might just make me angry, frustrated. I did have somebody contacted me and asked me about it and said, yeah, you should have watched it. So then I went and I read some of the statements. And between Skinwalker Ranch, and which I think has a lot of theatrics around it, was my feeling, and the Carpenter affair that I mentioned earlier, I'm not impressed with Mr. Bigelow's claims compared to what he actually presents. And so I think, again, we just have to keep coming back to the default of, if he ever wants to give us something that is available for public review, okay, but in the meantime, it's just talk. You know?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, and that's kind of how I felt seeing it, in a sense, where it was just like, you say you didn't see the segment, but I'll just tell you, it was like, if it was 5 minutes, you know, it could have been more, could have been less. I'm sure it was a little bit more, but let's say it's 5 minutes. The the conversation about UFOs and shit happened, like, at, you know, the 3.5 minute mark.
Uh-huh.
And it was maybe 30 seconds. So, like, it got a lot of coverage afterwards, but it was completely, and from my recollection of it, just off the top of my head, was, like, that the interviewer asked him, like, why he's so sure about UFOs, and I think he said he's, like, invested a ton of money in it, and he knows for sure there's something to it. Something like that, where it was like,
uh-huh.
And she didn't even, and I think, like, in a voiced-over aside, she was like, he says he's had close encounters, but he didn't want to talk about them. But it was like she never pressed, like, the dude about it at all in the conversation
yeah.
that was on screen. Like, if you know, that's one of those things that I'm not a big believer, like, in the media conspiracy idea. But then when you see something like that, it kind of makes you, like, raise an eyebrow where it's like, lady, you're like a shitty fucking reporter, man. Like, if you're interviewing some dude who's a multi-millionaire billionaire who's invested a shitload of money in UFOs and he says that he's sure that he's certain about what he believes and he believes in UFOs, like, you press him on that. You try to get information out of him. Even if you think
almost as if the only reason she asked was because people would say, why didn't you ask? But then they really didn't want to go down that road because they thought they'd end up criticized for that. Yeah, I can see your frustration about either talk about it or just leave it out, you know?
Right,
yeah.
Right. But it's like, what kind of reporter are you? Like, if you're interviewing a dude, like I said, even if he's like full of shit or crazy or what, he's a super billionaire who's invested a ton of money in it, like, and he's making these claims, like, you don't, like you're saying, it's like either give us something, you know. I don't know. My inclination would be like, the next words out of my mouth would be like, prove it. Prove it.
Yeah.
What do you have
yeah.
that makes you so certain, dude? You know, we're 60
yeah.
fucking minutes. Let's, you know, I don't know who you're saving this information for, but 60 minutes is pretty much where you're going to want to roll it out, bro.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd say the same thing that I've said about any number of other people that, no, you don't have to prove anything. You don't have to, you know, substantiate your story. But if you want people to accept your statement, you do, you know?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, you can't say, hey, believe me, without putting out any evidence. So that was frustrating to me because, to me, it's like, I think he... I'm willing to say that he probably has more information than you and I do about whatever this is. So what that might be, I have no idea. I would hope, although, you know, just from all the money he's allegedly invested. So what do you mean by you think that Skinwalker's theatrics, though? That, like, it was sort of like...
I'm not convinced that it hasn't served some purpose, like you were saying that you speculated that, you know, maybe at some point in the 1940s or 50s that part of the idea by the American intelligence agencies might have even been to just lead the Russians to wonder if we had better technology than we did or interventions with aliens or interactions with extraterrestrials. I've wondered if the Skinwalker Ranch or some of Bigelow's activities might be in league with intelligence agencies because of the way security clearances and are used and his personnel is included, and intelligence community members, and there's, you know, been rumors floated by people that allege to have worked with him. And another thing, though, that, I mean, was just a big thing to me that I don't think most of the UFO community really gets the potential significance is, during that failed MUFON Bigelow venture, one of the things that arose out of this, and I do think, too, like we were talking earlier, shortly after this is where MUFON really went south, like any ideas we had left of it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that happened before James Carrion left the MUFON and stopped being the director was he wrote about that Bigelow was moving funds when somehow involved with these commitments for financial support he'd made to MUFON, that he was moving funds on behalf of an undisclosed financial sponsor, and he would only reveal the identity of that sponsor to John Schuessler, but not the rest of the MUFON board. And that's a very unusual activity and chain of events for particular in the nonprofit industry, but particularly among in a UFO community that is so challenged for transparency and honesty in the first place.
Yeah, that's really, I never really dug that deeply into it, so that's kind of revelatory to me. That's interesting in a sense. It's like, who's, yeah.
It's that like, certainly deserves more, yeah, more attention before we accept things without question, that's for sure.
Well, that smacks of like the whole thing with Stephen Greer taking people on UFO hunts and making them sign non-disclosure agreements. It's like you can't, if the whole goal was to get to the bottom of this, you can't have some secret funder, like, you know.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and I've asked Colonel Alexander, who was employed by Mr. Bigelow, on several occasions for comment about some of those circumstances, and he declines, and as do many of the MUFON personnel involved. And James Carrion was clear with me in his interview that he agreed to have, that he simply doesn't see how what he observed from Bigelow's behavior, that he doesn't see how that could be part of the solution. That he, I think, in fact, he said something to the effect of it leads to murky, muddled, you know, muddy water or something to that effect. Because there were a number of things in that chain of events, and one of them was that Carrion and an accompanying scientist attempted to observe and take a look around Skinwalker Ranch, and they were denied access. And it's my understanding from reading James Carrion's writing and from the interview I conducted with him that Carrion simply doesn't buy the excuse that it's for your own safety. He just simply didn't buy it. And I mean, the idea has been floated before that Bigelow is relatively private. He doesn't owe anyone explanations. Okay, fair enough. Well, then don't make claims, you know.
Right,
if
right,
you're not willing to back up your claims and you're not willing to tell people who's footing the bill, then I'm really not interested in what you have to say. That's just me personally.
Right, right. Well, look at that guy that, look at that Rockefeller guy that, like, met with Hillary Clinton and shit with his UFO book. It's like he wasn't out there doing speeches and shit. You know what I mean? Or he
right.
wasn't teasing. He wasn't teasing that he, because Bigelow's not doing speeches. I take that back. But he wasn't out there doing interviews teasing that, you know, he knew shit about UFOs. If you're gonna, you know. It's just kind of
yeah,
shitty,
and
cause it's like, it, there's, as much as I decry it, there should be kind of a sense of camaraderie among people who are willing to give this fucked up mystery the time of day. So just
yeah.
don't leave us with blue balls, man, when you go on 60 Minutes. That's crazy.
Yeah, and the thing that we could say about Bigelow, too, that might escape the notice of the casual UFO community member, he has been significantly involved in the direction this narrative has headed. His money has, or at least funds that went through him, as James Carrion suggested, have been significantly involved in paying for activities of Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs. I believe John Mack had some funding. Obviously, he was involved in funding John Carpenter and, you know, some of his hypnotically induced narrations that he got. And there's a rather long list of things that the average individual would not know that money at least came through Bigelow to finance. And then when we see Mr. Carrion make that allegation that it wasn't Bigelow's money in at least one of those circumstances, yeah, that brings a lot into question. I mean, the intelligence community has a well-documented history of using nonprofit corporations to funnel money from intelligence agencies into projects that they desired to fund, and we just don't know what's going on when we don't know what's going on. And as I've stated to people in the past, the fact we don't know what happened is a good reason to want to know what happened.
Exactly, dude. Yeah, exactly. That could be like the mantra of the show. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the, you know, this shit's got layers, man. This shit's got layers. That's why I like doing this show. You know, I've been thrilled since we brought it back a few months ago, and I'm glad we got you back on the show. I got to go, though, dude, because we're going to run out of time, because the thing will cut me off at 3 hours, believe it or not. Like,
well, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it, too. And, you know, I think it was, as I said last week, we kind of did this with the ghost community, and just like I said on that show, we kind of just jumped right in and started smashing the fourth wall and then kept swinging sledgehammers around. And I think we kind of did that tonight here on the program, you and me looking at the UFO field. So, you know, and, you know, we didn't, I said at the beginning, I was a little worried we were going to, that I overhyped this episode in a sense. It's like, we're not calling people out, folks. We're not, like, naming names and shit. We're just kind of talking about some of the problems that have, they're like systemic problems, you know? They're not like specific people and shit. It's just like systemic problems that have cropped up in this field that we need to take an honest look at and try and figure out what the hell we're going to do about it, you know? There's a lot of good researchers and people and figures and folks like you and me and all our friends and stuff who are looking at this from a serious level, and it's like, we're doing good shit, but sometimes we can't lose sight of the forest for the trees.
Yeah, agree.
All right, Jack. Well, it's ufotrail.blogspot.com, correct? Not with the, there's no the in there, right?
Correct.
All right. And the book is The Grays Were Framed, and folks can get that on Amazon and all kinds of other places, right?
Yes, there's a link on my blog. The Grays Have Been Framed, and you can read reviews. And thanks. I really appreciate it, Tim. It's been great.
All right, brother. Well, have a good one, and we'll talk soon. I'll see you in the Twitterverse. We're actually, like, quite good Twitter buddies on there. So.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Have a great night.
You too.
All right. There you go, folks. That was Jack Brewer, author of The Grays Were Framed, and the man behind the UFO Trail blog. Both outstanding. As I said at the beginning of the show, Royce Myers is the UFO watchdog, but this guy, Jack Brewer, could be like the UFO watchdog, too. He's doing amazing work, keeping an eye on this crazy field of UFO research. There's a lot of problems here, man. There's a lot of problems, but hopefully the folks who are taking a serious look at it and aren't true believers or just crazy assholes can someday come up with some answers, or more importantly and more likely, come up with some cool theories, because that seems to be what's happening nowadays. People just throwing out interesting theories and observations about some of the periphery aspects of this phenomenon. That's where it's at, because trying to prove this thing, I don't know what else you can do. We've kind of dropped the ball on that one. It's not working, what we're trying to do. And on that note, we'll call it a night. Thanks again to Jack Brewer for coming on the show. I don't have a plug yet for next week's program. I got to pin down the guest in the next couple of days. I'm actually heading to Canada in August, which is actually right around the corner, which is scary. And I don't know the exact dates just yet, because I'm an awful vacation planner. But once I know that, then I can tailor it around the show a little bit. Chances are I'll definitely miss 1 week while I'm in Canada. Maybe two, I can't be certain, but I'm going to try and limit it to 1 week, and I'll be stopping in at some point at the East Coast Paracon in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, I believe, but even that's not pinned down, you know? I don't even know if I'm going to be there at the end of my trip, the beginning of my trip, but I'll be there. We've already done interviews from there, so I don't know if we're going to do that for the show, so I can't make any promises. I don't know what's going on, but we'll have a guest for you next week on the program, rest assured, and by then I should definitely know when I'll be in Canada. And like I said, I'll probably miss a week, but I'll definitely try and lock somebody in to be on the show either when I get back, or I would do one from Canada. I'll give it some thought, although as I joked once on Facebook, now that I've said that, I probably won't do it, but I'll give it some thought about doing a show from Canada. We'll see. Stay tuned to Banal America, as always, and BOA on Facebook, where I'll announce next week's guest, hopefully by tomorrow. And thanks again, folks, for listening. I really do appreciate it. Long-ass program tonight, but quite enjoyable with Jack Brewer, and I really enjoyed it. Hopefully, we didn't piss off too many people dissecting the innards of ufology. Thanks once again to Jack Brewer, and thanks, of course, to all you folks out there for listening. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.